the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things. That God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance. And they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Our shame. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Our shame. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Our shame. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home. The very young, the aged, the infirm. Left to reinvent themselves. Depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas. Both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Our shame. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation. Our shame. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists. The new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. Our shame. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. Our shame. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity. But they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
California. called Mississippi or the West. You with your red, white, and blue dress, long, straggly beard, pop belly and soggy eyes, pulling rabbits out of your top hat, and rats with welfare checks between their long yellow fangs, play in your hair, and your disease is spreading everywhere. But you can't kill me. You can't shoot what you can't see. You thought you shot Malcolm, but all you did was multiply his power. You thought you shot Martin, and black folks got stronger by the hour. You thought you blew away four little girls in Birmingham. The sweet spirit of a lamb cannot die or be denied of life eternally. And we shall live through all the barrages of madness that try to shoot us down in full living color. We will live for Clifford, for Mark, for Fred, Otis, Dave, Arthur, Mrs. King, for George and Jonathan, and all the brothers and sisters who were sacrificed for the price of our freedom and love for living and dancing on clouds, sipping sun rays through a straw. We live in awe of ourselves. You can't kill me. You can't kill me.
Listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host for today. I tell you, we had some things that we scheduled, but it's just so much going on in our world, our communities. There's no way that we cannot sit here tonight and produce without identifying and looking at some of those things that we're dealing with. The poet Charles Dickens said, "It's the best of times and it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom and it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, and it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, and it was the winter of despair." And he wrote that in his book, Tales of Two Cities. And as we look today out into our communities, we are dealing with some very interesting circumstances and crisis that have been going on now for a while, and they have Yeah, and things are always going on, but not like they are now. We have so many major areas that are affecting us. And one of the things that obviously we have to talk about is, as African brothers and sisters living here in America, along with all of the other things we have to deal with, is that we've got to talk about this violence that we are perpetrating against each other. That's the key. That has to stop. Because you cannot fight for liberation or any other way without first dealing with it at home. So tonight we're going to touch on that, and then next week we'll come back with our more topical discussion that I wanted to deal with. Just a couple of housekeeping things that I would like to mention. Those of you that are on the telephone, and you're on our switchboard, your microphones are very sensitive. Pick up background noise very easily. Like now I do hear someone who's has something on in the back, and you might want to put that on mute, and then when there's time for you like to say something, or I will maybe call you and ask you have some comments or suggestions, you can at that point unmute your phone. But it's very critical that you mute your phone so that, you know, that distraction noise does not pick up. So again, we welcome you. You know, we're here every Tuesday night. This is a call-in format. For those of you that are listening via the internet, you can call us here at area code 215-490-9832. And I repeat, 215 is the area code, 490-9832. And we are broadcasting on the Time for an Awakening platform. And we are part of the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network. And so we're here every Tuesday. We have another broadcast on Saturday and one on Thursday. We have actually two on Saturday and one on Thursday. And we are dealing with issues in our community, families, education, racism, and all of the different things that are impacting us consistently every day. And so, therefore, tonight we want to take a look at a troubling situation, is violence in our community. We are broadcasting from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is better known as the Dairy State. And that is very, 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 very difficult place sometimes for African Americans. It has some of the lowest ratings of all kinds of things, highest unemployment, black male incarceration, all kind of different things. And then on top of all of that, with the COVID, and on top of, you know, the unemployment and so forth, and poor health care service that we have here, we are then faced with we can't live with each other, meaning African people cannot live among each other. We are killing each other daily. We're killing our babies. We're killing our children. Night before last, right here about maybe two blocks from where we are broadcasting right now, an 11-year-old girl was killed and a 5-year-old girl was shot in a drive-by kind of shooting. The mother had gone into the store. They had just come from Chuck E. Cheese, and they were on their way home and had stopped off at the store, and she lost her two children. Senseless killings. And one of the unique things, and which is why I want to have this discussion tonight, is you have to look and talk about cause and effect, and you have to talk about solutions and what they'll be. And when you start hearing some of the solutions that are coming from people that we would expect better, it is very troubling. Obviously, the mayor of this city responded, and he said that the solution is to turn it over to the state. That was his solution to the problem. I still have someone that has not muted their mic yet. Could you please do that? We're hearing background and noise that is distorting. Thank you very much. So, again, those are the kinds of solutions we ask. People are saying why. Some people are saying, well, it's trauma, it's stress. And I'm not saying, when I name those, I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just listing some of the things that, you know, we hear. Socioeconomic, parenting, those are the issues that we hear. Lack of education, poor education system. And Milwaukee does have one very, very bad educational system. Obviously, I've even heard the fact that COVID is affecting the behavior of people, and that people are responding in the ways that we are, and on. So the list goes on. And so the problem, however, relies upon, until we can identify, you know, the root of some of the causes, you can't cure it, and you can't resolve it without doing that first. And so we wait for our politicians, and we wait for other political figures to try to do that, but very clearly they cannot answer some of those things that are going on right in our community. We have to do that. Our community has to do that. That's what it's done historically. And so tonight I wanted to see if we can just generate some ideas among each other, thoughts. You know, many of you participate in other types of organizations, and you're involved in planning groups, and you're involved in community activist groups, political action groups, and maybe there are some ideas that we can take back to those venues and attempt to try to address this horrible situation that's going to destroy us if we don't immediately address this. I have grandchildren, like many of you, I'm sure, have grandchildren. I have great-grandchildren, and I really think about their future. I have grandchildren that are older, in their 30s and 40s. I have some that are in that are 10, 8, 7, 2, 1. And so what is the future for them? What do they have to do? You have to ask that. And the question then is, do we sit and just look and wait? So tonight, how many more bullets is it going to take? The last poets said that in the song tonight. How many more bullets is it going to take for us to respond? Now, we had this discussion about a year ago when some of these things were going on. And we asked the question, how many bullets will it take for us to do something, to stand up as a community and address that? We have people in political office, and I'm going to just speak for this city because it's where I am right now, but many of you, I'm sure, can speak from your city. Well, we have young, black, energetic, young political leaders that are in office right now there. We have a young black brother that's more than likely going to run for mayor, or will be appointed a mayor on a temporary basis because the current mayor is getting ready to take a another position with the Biden administration. And so he is the head of the president of what's known here as the Common Council, and so he is the person that will move into that slot until there is an election. And so for a very short time, he'll get a chance to be the mayor of this city. And what will he do? We have aldermen. We have a very large number of aldermen that are members of the Common Council who make the decisions for the communities. But they are in crisis. We have one young sister right now who's been indicted for misappropriation of money. So we've got all those issues along with the crime that's going on every day. All kinds of things, and it's at a level now that's unbelievable. The COVID situation is really limited the education. You know, there are many schools here that have started back, and they've gone back on a physical basis, but a lot of them had to go back to virtual because the numbers are high. And I was just listening this evening at the 5 o'clock news, and this is the highest they said it's been since December of last year. So again, what do you do? What do we do as a community? How do we respond to that? How do we answer that? I don't have the total answer. You know, I have concepts and ideas that I think could get to an answer, but I don't have the answer. I need the community. I need my brothers and sisters to work with me and talk about doing some of that. I'm not just watching me personally. I'm involved with a group of people that in the community, they're elders, and they're working to do some things, and just like many of you are. I spent a number of years in education, teaching in the university, and I tried to set up a teaching platform that would address a lot of problems and that we as a community can get together and do things with both black and white students. So tonight, that's what we are going to do. We're going to talk about what is it that we do. Now, normally the response is to look at elected officials and to talk about addressing it from that realm. Because some of the causes, again, that's been addressed is socioeconomic, and obviously that requires a family kind of thing. But our family structure has been skewed somewhat, and it's very troubling in a lot of cases, single-family-headed households, a lot of unemployment in those households, domestic violence, alcohol and drugs, you know, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're whole families. And the people who are just trying to survive, go to work, pay their bills, buy groceries, take care of their kids, and then they're doing some of the things that they need to do. But I think we got to look at it, and it's got to go at it a little bit deeper than that. We've got to be much more responsive as a collective group in our communities. We've got to go back to some of what the old ways were, where communities came together when you have crises like this and fought back, even if it was among ourselves. And we may have to call upon that kind of force again. And somehow this seems to have fallen silent among our communities. What's wrong with having a group of men to patrol their streets at night? Is there a problem with that? What's wrong with watching police action in our community and making sure that police officers are doing what they're supposed to do and what they should do? What's wrong with going to city council meetings, school board meetings, and disrupting those meetings if they are not addressing those issues that need to be addressed? What's wrong with that? And that's where we want to talk about it. And we're not doing that. You got people going to meetings to disrupt because they don't want to wear a mask during this COVID crisis, and they are disrupting groups and doing those kinds of things. Where are the folk that need to disrupt these meetings about this crime in our cities and the things that are going on? We are beginning to see crimes at levels that you had not seen before, and home invasions, for instance. That's something you usually don't always see in smaller cities as a home invasion. I just heard that on the news today in one of the communities here in Wisconsin. There's a home invasion, and it resulted in a murder. So how do we do that? People sit in their house, laying in the bed, sleep, gunshots ringing through their windows. They don't know anything. How do we stop that? Who do you go to? How is that done? And those are the questions that we want to look. So we have our normal community panel that's here tonight, and I'm going to call on them to look at it. We've got various cities that are represented here, so we can get a kind of a collective view. We've got Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We've got the Carolinas. We've got Georgia on the phone. Got different kinds of work. We've got an ex-police officer on the phone. Maybe they can help us talk some of this out and see what is it that we can do to get our community moving and moving in a direction that can obviously bring about change. That's the key. Elected officials can't do that, and they definitely can't do it by themselves, and they can't do it because a lot of times they don't come to the table with the skills and the training to do that. One of my suggestions was an idea that I posed in many public meetings is that our community, before we decide that we're going to vote on a particular representative to cover our community, that we demand that they get some kind of training, that there be some kind of a venue where they can go and learn how to be a public official and represent their community. I'd like to see that done. And there are some cities that do that. They have a political action group, and these political action group, when you say you want to run office, you go before them. They interview you and determine whether or not they're going to support you, and then get you to do some training. You have to have training. You're a black man, and you're going to run for the mayor of Milwaukee. You need to know about Milwaukee. You may have been born and raised here, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily know the city. You got to know the details of the city. Who are the financial giants of the city that are quiet, that you don't see? You know, who runs the Chamber of Commerce for your city and where they stand? Who are the big corporate leaders? Who are the largest employers and those things? Those are the kinds of things that a lot of times our political and political figures do not know and do not have and do not know how to go about looking at that and why that's important. Do you know the history of your city if you're going to run for office? Do you know who the mayors have been over the last maybe, say, 20 years? Who were they? And those are things that, you know, are part of the solution to what we're talking about. Because once you have that kind of background and you have that kind of political acumen, you know then how to go about making change and putting things in place and getting the community to move. You have that thing to do. So that's what we want to look at tonight. So why don't I do this? I want to, I'll move around and I'll go to my good brother. He's always here with us every night, every Tuesday night, Brother Timothy. Philadelphia has a set of unique problems as well. You got all kind of stuff going on there. Historically, it's been a hotbed of political issues. What is the state of Philadelphia right now, Brother Timothy?
Dr. Rogers, I'm happy you let me have the floor, and I'm going to build. One time I talked to you, Dr. Rogers, that was in the summertime. We had 300 murders. Dr. Rogers, we have 420 murders. Dr. Rogers, and I hate to say this to you, I could be going to hit 500 in January. Mm-hmm. I hate to say that, but listen to me, Dr. Rogers. Please listen to me well, okay? That not knowing your history, not being concerned about your community, and not in your education program, in the public school system, parochial school, private schools, a little bit better because people are paying big money, have failed. Leadership in the black community have failed. Dr. Rice, I'm going to start with you with this. The primary for the mayor's race will be in May, a couple months from now. Mm-hmm. The mayor right now, Jim Kenney, is Irish, a white guy, right? Mm-hmm. But the other thing, Dr. Rogers, is there are 9 people that are people of color in city council. So whatever the mayor may be able to do, he's just a figurehead. They could vote on the issues, make sure there's housing, affordable housing mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. See, poverty is important. Right. Make sure that nobody's taking your schools, your neighborhood. See, education is important. And guess what, Dr. Rogers? We got black-on-black crime in Philadelphia. Dr. Rogers, a couple nights ago, you had 2 employees at the hospital. 2 employees were shooting on the 9th floor of Jefferson Hospital.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm going to tell you again. In the hospital. And my physicians, I go to a weight doctor, and I just go to a doctor, check my pressure, my sugar, all that kind of stuff. I handle those problems. I go to a doctor every 2 months anyway. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I'm saying to myself, I got friends of the nurses. We already got a problem with the COVID. Most of them had to take the shot. Most of them are not working. They got whatever it is. The issues that are going on in Philadelphia, doctor, mm-hmm. I'm going to say this to you. This program is important because what we put into this, we get out.
Right.
Give example. Now, the commissioner, she's a black woman. See, they satisfy you with these black people. But Dr. Rogers don't seem like they have a lot in their head. Their face is color, and their skin, their pigmentation is one thing, but they do another. Their mind goes somewhere else. The commissioner, she's a young lady. She's about 40. She went from California to here. Now, it's a different story here. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. She gets mm-hmm. here, right? And they want to satisfy you having something black, because we wanted a black commissioner, okay? She gets in here. You know what? This is during they were protesting with Floyd and all these things going on with murders. She lets them use tear gas. You already know that you got to have a better method. She starts off wrong. And Dr. Rogers, when my new mayor's elected, she's gone. Let me talk about the superintendent. She's black. The superintendent of schools has been here for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Rogers, he just stated that he's leaving in September. Dr. Rogers, the public school system is terrible. It's expensive. Dr. Rogers.
Okay, let me ask you this. Now we know that we can lay out what some of these tragedies are in our cities. Right. A lot of these folk, we put in office, we pay the taxes to make sure that the government is run properly, so we have some say-so. Why? And you are in a unique position. First of all, you're in education. You
right.
see, you got a bunch of folks sitting in front of you every day that you're trying to
That's
teach
right.
and train to make
That's
a better
right.
community. You also
That's
belong
right.
to one of the most powerful black organizations that there has been with a
right.
very clear-cut plan of action. Why
right.
isn't what is being? Well, I'm going to ask why is it? What is being done then? You know, from that realm of things and from the realm of the things of your organization to straighten some of that out.
I'm going to say this to you, Dr. Rogers. Here's the thing that I'm going to give you. In 1974, there were gangs fights from 74 to the 50s, right?
Yes.
And the antidote at that time. This is anybody tell you that? Who stopped the gang wars? No more gang wars in 74. Stay alive in 75. Was the Nation of Islam under Jeremiah Sabas and Sister Falaka Fatah. She had the House of Emotion. It was nothing for a brother to jump and say, look, the leader of the gang is with us. See, they ain't gang war no more.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're in the temple now. See, a brother could bring you in. They'd fish you in and bring you in. The House of Emotion was the same thing. You see what I'm saying, Doctor? See, when you have these power centers and you have these people who are concerned about their communities, then it makes a difference. Okay? So we don't have the strength of the nation like it was in Philadelphia in the 50s, 60s, all the way up to now. Hey, wait a minute. You don't have those programs anymore, Dr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, Dr. Rogers, is the police reform is one thing. Police reform is one thing, and black-on-black crime is another. Now, I have to say this to you, Dr. Rogers. These are some different type of teenagers. I mean, the way that they kill each other, video games, whatever, and they know how to get guns, they know how to shoot. During the pandemic, they were mm-hmm. killing each other.
Yeah.
During a pandemic.
Okay,
what
do you see about in the reference to parenting? Now, you're a teacher, you're an educator.
Right.
What about the parent situation? And something that can be done to provide skills for parents, for young parents, 19, 20-year-old mothers.
Go ahead. The pandemic made it worse. See, we're severely handicapped. We've been severely handicapped, period. Okay? That's why we come on this program, to heal one another, to understand how we make it. Dr. Rogers, the parents have to be parented. Okay, in order to teach the children the dysfunctions that's going on. They put clothes on their body, you got to put information in their head. And the children are doing the best they can. And sometimes the parents are too, Dr. Rogers. But guess what? I'm going to say this to you, Dr. Rogers. If these children were white, killing each other wouldn't happen.
Okay.
They I'm going to tell you something. They would find ways to have a National Guard. They would find ways to have community control. They would find ways to stop the selling of guns. If these children were white, I said, Dr. Rogers, 420 murders.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it like this. By December, January, 500.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm saying, but Dr. Rogers, we got to learn how to take care of our own communities by now. Don't you think so? But Dr. Rogers, when we get in office, we still gentrified. Dr. Rogers, when we get in office, we still turn our backs on one another. Dr. Rogers, and most of our families, most of our problems that we have come from our families.
Okay.
That's the truth.
All right, I'm gonna come back to you. Let me go to somebody else. Let me ask Brother Kwasi Kraft. He's an ex-police officer in the state of Wisconsin, and you were a police officer in an area that was very racist and biased, still is. And so, what have you seen that has changed in the behavior of people during this COVID period of time? Because that's one of the excuses, that's one of the causes that I hear a lot that is happening, that this is the crisis that we're in, the COVID situation. What do you see? Do you see that as a possibility that might have had some effect? What's making people do some of this crazy stuff they're doing right now, you think?
Well, you know, Dr. Rogers and Hotep family, thanks for giving me this opportunity to chime in. People put a lot on COVID, I don't think that's COVID. And I say that for the simple fact, if you don't have a certain mindset, you know, there's people out there murdering people, raping people, robbing, doing all type of things like that. They weren't doing it before COVID, and they weren't doing it during COVID. But what predators do, they take opportunity to take advantage of people. And so you have a lot of people that are in situations now that they weren't in before just because of financial situations and so forth. They're out more and they're among people that they would normally not be among and stuff like that. And that's how crime kind of works. But people can narrate that and they can frame it how they want to frame it based on whatever they want to do or how they want to call it for whatever purpose. And when I say purpose and stuff, because a lot of people, I think one of the biggest things, yeah, we do need police, but we also need police reform. But one of the things that comes with police reform is the reduction of money that they get, and that money goes into the community and helping people learn different job situations and scenarios. And you know, in a lot of the factories that can come in and make wage jobs where people can support a family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we don't have those situations in Milwaukee a lot. So you have this attitude that's been promoted where, you know, I don't mind, you don't matter kind of thing.
All right, let me ask you something. If you could, help me understand this a little bit. Okay, I'm going to give you two case scenarios. Back here, maybe about 5, 6, 7 years ago, Highway 100 at night was being used as a speedway for these young white kids that lived out there in that area. They were using it as a speedway. They would speed up and down Highway 100. They would turn into those things and doing all kind of things. And so the call came out that they needed to do some things. And one of the things is that they just flooded that area with police officers. And they put those barriers where you couldn't make a U-turn in between those islands and things like that. And they really took an aggressive action. Today, on Sherman Boulevard streets like Burleigh that have those islands, there have been several horrible killings with automobile accidents. These kids speed up and down the Sherman Boulevard all times of the night. They motorcycles doing loud radios blasting 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. And there's nothing done. Now, I heard somebody say something the other day that police have written about 100,000 tickets. Something like that, some number like that. But it hasn't stopped it. So what is the difference then that between what now one Highway 100, they don't have that problem anymore because they had a lot of those large businesses that were there.
Right.
So what happened? What's the difference between those two areas?
Well, here's the thing, and if you remember on my show last weekend, we had a former Milwaukee detective, and she said, look at, if you want to know what the difference is, look at the victims. And so the people that are being victimized, you know, out in the on Highway 100, you had people zooming around in their nice hot rods, you know, their 67 Chevys. I mean, so these are people that they got money, nice cars, and this and stuff. They didn't want to bang those cars up. But one of the problems that happened was when people from the south side started coming to Highway 100. So you had a mixture of people. You had Hispanic people. You had black people engaging with these white people. That was the real problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it was like, we don't want these guys over here and so forth and this and that. And so, you know, so that was an easy thing to kind of eliminate, you know, because you could target people based on color, this, that, and stuff like that. And that's basically what they did. And they did put up speed barriers, and they did do saturation control and so forth. So they put the manpower out there. You can notice in the Milwaukee area, even if you go to Sherman Park, even though they wrote all those tickets, one of the things that you'll see is not a uniform effort in regards to how police are handling things. And when I say not a uniform effort, you may have some people that's going to write some tickets, and you can see somebody speeding, driving erratically and so forth, and you can see a police officer in the squad car sitting right there and not taking, and not moving.
Okay.
And they're just posting that position for hours, you know, throughout the day. And so that uniform effort in regards to the concern for people in your area is not there.
Okay, so you're...
And that's the difference. There is a big concern for people out there, and when you look at the majority of the police officers, you know, that's white police officers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're going to look out after your own.
Well, Highway 100, that's West Dallas, isn't it? That's West Dallas police, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so that's what we're seeing. So, like, it's sad, but race always plays into it.
So and, then, you know, so then, in terms of the African-American community, we can't look at doing that kind of thing and that happening expeditiously. Where we could stop some of that, because that's where the shooting was. That's where the killing right. the other day of those two little girls. That was right there on Sherman Boulevard. Those cars were speeding up and down there, and they were shooting at each other. And the bullets hit those two babies. And then that car accident that went out of control in the middle of the day. They were drag racing in the mid 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the middle of the day, so you ask the question, where were the police? You know, and so we know that that's not the answer then. So in terms of
right.
the solution. So then,
well, you know,
go ahead,
one of the things that they did, and you have to look at 1980. In 1980, they took out, I was the year I graduated from high school, they took out driver's ed in the early 80s. So, if a kid wanted to learn how to drive, you know, back then we learned everything at school, driver's ed. The only thing that we ever had to pay for was when we took our permits and paid for our permits and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then you paid again when you took your test to get your license. But all that was done in the high school.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
You had your auto mechanics there. You had all those different things. So you learned how to do brake maintenance and stuff like that. So you knew certain things and stuff like that. So even if you didn't have a dad or somebody that could teach you certain things, you learned those things, whether it was home ec and stuff like that. But they took a lot of that out. And so we are dealing with a lot of these people that grew up with parents and didn't have driving skills, this, that, and stuff like that. So when you look at, and this is a reflection of that, you know, because it's like, these are the kids of the parents in those situations and stuff like that that didn't have this driving. And if you want to take the driving, you can, but it costs you now, you have it's about $400.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to sign up for that. And most of our kids don't have that. You know, so that was an issue, and they know about that.
So then the education system and what shells that they had built that could have helped are not there now, are not there anymore. Correct.
Right.
That's what you're saying. So exactly. We can't look at that too much of a way. And then I don't have anybody here on that's representative of the Black church, I don't think. But the church, for instance, used to do things. They had community programs in the evening where they did parenting. And they would help mothers understand how to parent your children. You have 22-year-old children today with kids in school. So if she had a baby when she was 15, then that she has a child in the first or second grade, possibly. And so that is an area we have to look at. We got a young parentship that needs to be trained because grandmothers now are 35, 34.
Yes.
When you say think of grandmothers, you don't think of old somebody being elderly. So those are issues as well that have to be put into this equation somehow or the other to do it. So that's why I'm hearing that it's a whole joint community effort, and it's just not happening. Let me go over. I'll come back to you, Brother Quarles. Let me go over here to Georgia. Brother West, is that you?
Yes, sir. Dr. Rogers, how you doing?
Doing, my good friend. How you doing?
Hey.
What's going on in Georgia? How's Georgia handling this, man? Because I was there a couple of years ago when I left, and it was crazy then. So what is it now?
Same thing going around the whole country, man. See,
same
Doc.
Thing. Okay, yes.
This is my solution right here. Everybody uptight. Okay, so this is my solution.
Okay,
I
please.
I look at the scenario of boxing, right?
Yes, see, go right ahead and run it.
Boxing match. What do they do? Each round in boxing go 3 minutes, right, Doc?
Yeah, right.
When you see somebody, so the reason I transfer that to real life, collective critical analysis, conflict resolution. So what I did, Doc, I said, if I get in a disagreement or difference of opinion with anybody, okay, what I do, Doc, I shut it down. I time myself time. I don't go past 3 minutes with nobody, Doc.
Okay.
See what I figured out. If you go past 3 minutes with somebody, y'all got different opinion, okay, somebody going to get angry and danger, and there it go. Everything go. Because when you get mad, nobody can think straight when they get mad, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, man, conflict resolution, I shut it down within 3 minutes, man.
Okay.
After 3 minutes of me, whoever I'm talking to, got a disagreement, I shut my mouth, man. And see, I did some more research, especially with women, between a man and a woman. Okay, a woman used about 50,000 words a day. Okay, men, we only use between 10,000 and 20,000. So my synapses, deductive reasoning, no man can out-talk no woman, man. You cannot do it, Doc. A man cannot out-talk no woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it took me a while to figure it out. Okay, because a woman will talk fast, so fast on you, and especially if she's angry, bruh, you get locked jaw. I get locked jaw.
So what are you saying? What are you saying about that? Go ahead. Tie it together for me.
That's still my 3 minute. That's my 3 minute rule, man.
Okay.
Okay, the 3 minute rule. Hey, with anybody, especially I talk to y'all, young people and old people too, especially young boys, man. Okay, I tell them, man. I know everybody's so emotional now. You got to use deductive reasoning, man. Deductive and inductive reasoning, conflict resolution. When you got a problem, that shut your mouth. Whatever problem is, the creator, the answer comes to you. If you be quiet and just think of the problem, the answer always show up. But anyway, anybody on the phone call, if you got a disagreement with somebody, do not go past 3 minutes. It work every time, Doc.
Okay. So who teaches that? Who teaches that to our young people? Who needs to teach that? I mean, because the parents can't, because they don't know it.
Each one, teach one, man. That's what I do. When I talk to people, I talk because I'm an electrician. I'm on a job where I'm like the oldest dude. Me and about four or five older guys about the same age. So I talk to them, too, and the young ones, too.
Right.
Do not go past 3 minutes, man. Do not.
Okay.
I'm telling you, Doc, it worked, man. That three-minute rule, man, just like in boxing. Because if they go past 3 minutes in a round, they'll kill each other in a boxing match, man. That's why it's 3 minutes. Everybody go to their corner and cool off, man.
Mm-hmm.
Family, that three-minute rule worked, man.
And I don't rule that out. I don't rule that out. I read something the other day about that. And that saying in the article, the writer was saying that a lot of people now are, we're doing a lot of talking and we'll cut each other off a lot. We have a tendency to cut people off and doing that. And then the author was saying that maybe when we do that, we're really engaged in what you're saying. And what we're trying to do is get out a little bit in there. But nevertheless, you're right. You know, how much can be effective? You want it to be effective in what you're doing and being able to do and talk with each other. So,
yes, sir. Yeah. I say this one more thing. It's the reason why the Creator, our God, gave us two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. Okay. Just think about that, Doc.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fun time to be alive, man. That's what I do. I'm a peacemaker. First, I tell these young brothers, we need all our soldiers, man. Okay, every time we get in an argument with one of our own people, the enemy love it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so whatever the enemy love, we got to do the opposite, man.
Okay, all
okay?
right.
Okay, I study the art of war. Go to Sun Tzu, the art of war, and once you learn how to take care of the enemy within, Doc, nobody can control you.
Right.
You learn the enemy within, and nobody, you won't have no enemy without, man.
Okay.
I know it's hard, especially these conversations on sports, politics, religion, and sex. Them heated. Everybody got opinion on
yeah,
them.
Yeah, those are very hot issues. Those are very hot issues. But I still think that there's some things that we have to do in order to get folks to seeing how we can take back our communities and change some of the things that we are seeing. I really do believe that. I don't think we can just sit back idly. And not do something. And I think that was the
one person at a time.
Purpose
one person at a time, Doc. Mm-hmm. That's the way it goes. You call it. And see, people talk about responsibility. No, sir. It's the ability to respond.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and all of our institutions that we've had traditionally have done that in the past. Like for instance, in your case, in Atlanta. Historically has had some very powerful black institutions that was going about doing things, sitting right over there in, I don't know where you live, but over there you got that group of universities, black universities, mm-hmm. That were seedbeds for fighting.
Yep.
Clark, Atlanta was the home of W.B. Du Bois's think tank. That's what I call it.
Yes,
think
sir.
Tank over there. And he used to run the Crisis magazine, which was the NAACP paper, and he ran something called a journal called the Phylon. And what he did with that, and how he did that, is he was going after political action programs to develop in the community, and that's one of the reasons that Atlanta has had a very strong black political machine, and it wasn't just the fact that they were smaller than anybody else, but they had the institutions to back them up. They had black churches. Martin Luther King's motivation to do what he did came out of a black church in Atlanta, that his daddy was the pastor of it. And then, like I said, Morehouse and Spelman and Clark Atlanta and Morris Brown, and all of those schools were active in training a cadre of young people to go out in the community and build and fight. That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone now. You know, we don't have that anymore. And I don't want to talk about Morehouse and Spelman, but you know what's done happened over there.
Yes, sir.
You know, so they're not fighting like that anymore. I don't know about Clark, Atlanta. I don't know what they're doing. But it's good when you have, for instance, my hometown, Durham, North Carolina, they had a black university that people could go and train, come out, help build the city. They don't have that anymore. black churches that could do things, stand up and fight back. So what now do you do? Do you just let it go? You still got to do something. You just, even though it's not, that's not there, you got to build something else. And I don't see us doing that.
Well,
and that's why I think,
like I say, Doc, man,
on a runaway train.
This conflict resolution, the main thing.
But I like what you're saying. I like the conflict. I like that idea. I'm not disregarding that at all. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Brother
all
White.
I appreciate it. God
Brother
bless.
White, you had two cities that you lived in, very powerful. New York has the same kind of machinery. New York City, black business community was always been strong. You know, you had a black press, you had black radio stations that were powerful, that could fight, wouldn't let you just run over them. You couldn't do that. They've had, you know, strong black political leaders. You know, what happened? What happened and where are we now? How do we get those kind of institutions or similar to that back in action again and fight that power?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good
and Hotep to the African family. In the diagnosis of PTSD, you have to have a stressor incident in the individual's life that caused them to react in that way.
Mm-hmm.
African people have a 500-year continuous stressor.
Okay, I like that.
This never let up. This never let up. And never had any type of help or counseling or anything to ameliorate the situation because it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you went to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist says, well, what's going on? And you start with when we were kidnapped out of Africa and started to chronicle everything that's happened to black people on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
from the plantation to Jim Crow and all of that to what's happening right now. How do you think a person is supposed to react?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a little child, 5 or 6 years old, and they have a terrible nightmare, they jump up and they run into their parents' bedroom to get into bed with their parents for safety and security. What happens when there's nobody there? And they have to deal with that fear by themselves.
Right, exactly.
What does that fear develop into, and what type of mechanism do they develop to combat that fear? So when you see these killings and these shootings, these are the ones that was left on the battlefield. A lot of us have families and relatives and close to you that can nurture you through some of that anxiety.
Right, right.
And help you with these things that are going on so you can respond to them properly. But the ones that don't have that, the ones that's left on the battlefield, they only have one reaction: to kill everything they see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way they can see to be safe.
That's a good point. Frightening
point.
When
we can put our arms around each other. I told you I had a cousin that didn't expect to outlive his grandfather. And I did some things to help him. But when you have people who are feeling that isolated, where everything for a lot of young black people, everything is cut off. a sense of worth, a sense of creativity, mm-hmm. a sense of belonging. It shut down.
That's true.
They have nothing. So that turns back into themselves, and it turns to anger and frustration, and they take it out on the nearest thing to them.
That's correct. And that's what
we're seeing out here. These young people that are doing these terrible things are the ones that got left on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Speak truth.
That's right. Exactly right. Let me ask Brother Marcus. How you doing tonight, Brother Marcus?
I'm doing great, Dr. Rajas. Greetings.
What is your
in Memphis, I think this week or last week, you know, a 13-year-old shot another 13-year-old in the elementary.
Right.
He didn't die, but, you know, but the word community, that common unity, and there is no common unity in our community.
Right.
Now, I came to America in 1980, and I lived in Brooklyn. And one thing I saw in Brooklyn that I don't see now, that black folks used to do, we used to have black parties. See?
Mm-hmm.
We used to have black parties and everybody get together. And in that way, you could gel the community. See, the neighbors knew each other, you know, but then, you know what happened, the crack epidemic came and then people started shooting up the thing, and then the police said, okay, all right, you know what, let's just scrap everything. So we didn't have that social outlet to socialize again,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't have that social outlet. We may have to go back to that to get the people out in the community, to get them to come out, to get the message out to them. We may have to go back to that model to draw the people. We need something to draw the people so we can get the message out. Because a lot of people, they don't go to church. A lot of people are barricaded in their house, you know?
Right.
But we have to recreate and procreate. We got to create that environment, you know, where we can socialize together. We got to recreate together, play together, socialize together, and procreate, produce more of us, make more Africans instead of eliminating. You know, we have to change the whole dynamic, the mm-hmm. whole psychology. We have to change other mm-hmm. people.
Mm-hmm.
But we can change it using music the same way they use music negatively. We can use music getting back to them black parties, getting black to getting the information out in the street and working with the police.
Correct.
Because the police will give us the protection in the parties. Say, look, all right, we're going to have this black party. We need the police and us to because that makes their job easier.
True.
You see?
That's true.
And maybe we have to go back to community policing too, where the police walk the beat. That's and the police know everybody on the block.
The way it used to be.
They know mm-hmm. who live in that house. He know where the trap house is. He know who having domestic problems right there. See?
That's right.
So, we have solutions. We just have to get a backbone and stand up. Because ain't nobody coming to save us. I keep saying that. These people here, they're working to destroy us. The educational system in the school working to destroy us. But other folks use it. Chinese people use it.
That's right.
Jewish people use it. You see? But what they have the synagogue, they go to on Sunday, and the Chinese people have their culture. So, you know, we have to begin to, you know, when that little boy got shot in that school, right? You know the first place they took the kids? To the church. They say, oh, let's get them out here. Why the hell they didn't do that before?
That's right.
Somebody had to get shot. You know, and then they're okay, no, it is time for them to step up too and make these places be an oasis for our people to get to change the psychology. Because that's where the revolution has to go. It has to go to the mind of the people.
Mm-hmm.
See, without we change the mind, the psychology, this killing going to continue. So we have a job ahead of us, but we can do it. You know, we have to just have confidence in ourselves and, you know, have some type of system to get the information out, because the information is here. We are here on the radio talking. You know, we should have millions of black people to be listening tonight, you know, to this, you know. So.
And that's why we have to spread that word like that. You're right. You're right, Brother Marcus. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And, you know, that's really what other communities do as well. And not that they don't have problems either. They have problems, you know. The Chinese fight. They have gangs and clubs and cliques. And they have disagreements. But, you know, when it comes time to running their businesses and doing what they do, that's different. It's different. And other communities are the same thing. You know, one of the things that I think you have to look to, we broke, as soon as a lot of times we got successful and got jobs, we abandoned our community and moved out to try to live in other communities. And we left our communities hanging in some cases. We left children who may have seen you as a role model, don't have you there anymore, who may have seen you as a participant with the Little League baseball team. That's what those things were for. It wasn't just about playing baseball. It was they were used as opportunities to teach and to mentor football leagues. You know, they needed to see young men and young women working with them, hands-on. And a lot of times we abandoned that and moved out to the white neighborhood and left that hanging because we felt we wanted a better way of life. It didn't offer that for us anymore. So those are the kinds of things that we got to go back and look at. There has to be a training ground. And then virtue, these types of discussions that we're having here and what we're trying to do here on the Black Reality Think Tank and a Time for an Awakening network system, there's a lot of programs on talking about this same thing, trying to give people an opportunity to think out what is taking place. My whole thing is that it's almost kind of like a three-step process in terms of our community and building back our community. We have to get together first and think. It has to be a thought process. And then we got to put the thoughts in action. So it has to be action. And then what we do once we think, put it in action, we have to evaluate what we're doing and see if that's working. So it's a three-step. Think, action, evaluate. And then as we see where we are. And it may not always, the evaluation may not be good. We may have to do something different. But we got to do it. And we got to use whatever institutions that we have to use it. You know, we got to get our religious institutions to respond and let us use facilities that are available for our community. I know here in Milwaukee, at one point in time, they used to have Saturday breakfasts where we had kids come together, and we had a program called Breakfast with the Boys. And we would have young men, we would have school principals that would send certain young boys to these breakfasts on Saturday morning. And it was like a big family breakfast table. And we would sit around, and every young man had to sit between two men, and each man talked in general just about anything, nothing specific, no No root, no detail thing, but just conversation. Then a breakfast table, dinner table kind of format. And then ask them questions and let them respond to their lives and what they're doing. And good breakfasts, too. All kind of good old food. But that's what we have to get back to. They don't have those anymore. People are not doing that. And we need to get back to doing some of that. That type of activity and get that. Let me go over to Grand Prairie, Texas, 214-926 and see if there's a comment, question you might have, caller. Grand Prairie, Texas, 214-926. Okay, just listening. All right, that's fine. Let me go to 414-573. Questions or comments?
This is 214-926. Actually, the phone is Texas, but I am in Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. All right. A question that you would like comment?
Well, I'm a... I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, so I've been this route, you know. I understand this. I know that our kids are in trouble because we as adults have not been able or unwilling to support them. And right. I'm really just listening to hear some things because I am a program developer, and so I'm just trying to hear some things that we can tap into.
Okay, great, good. And by all means, you know, if you've got some ideas, and there are things that we can do to bring these children together. There are some things that, and we've said this 100 times here on the Black Reality Think Tank, is the idea of Saturday schools. And put those Saturday schools in operation. And you can teach these very same things we're talking about in Saturday schools.
Yeah.
And we are operating one right now. It's not on Saturday. It's on Sunday, but it's still it's a Saturday school concept. And we're helping young people in terms of seeing themselves and who they are and their leadership potential and, you know, the things that they have and knowing a little bit about their history and what they are. And you'll be amazed sometimes at how interesting they find the topics that we talk about. And we talk about Africa and talk about some of the things that were done historically here in America. They're shocked to hear that. They say, I never heard that before. You know, and it's just amazing. I get a lot of joy sometimes out of doing that. We've got about 17 kids that we're dealing with on Saturday. And on Sunday. And some of the parents are involved. And we've, in order for the young people to be a part of the Saturday school, they have to have, their parent has to participate as well, too, to a certain extent. They don't have to be in the class, but they have to come and start it out and make sure that the young person is logged in properly and things like that, because we're doing it virtually right now. And hopefully sometime we can move it and go back to face-to-face. But that's the kind of thing we're doing. And that's what we can do. We can do just those kinds of things. Because in the old days, that's what they did. A lot of times the churches used to do that. I don't know how many of you remember, they used to have something in the Baptist churches called BTU. And called the Baptist Training Union. But it was a gathering point where kids came together and talked about stuff and behavior. It was done in the evenings and so forth. And these were great opportunities to learn. And learn how to want to work in your community and do things and how all of that operates. Okay, I'm going to go down and let 414-429. Sister Dee, how you doing? Sister Dee, 414-429, you got any comments or you just listening tonight?
Oh, yes, good evening, and thank you, Dr. Rogers. Yes, and good evening, family. I'm just listening.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, you know, you're sitting right in that hotbed. You know what we're dealing with here. And, yeah. Okay. All right.
Dr. Rogers.
Thank you, Minute. Thank you so much. Brother Timothy, you had something you just wanted to add. I know you had something you wanted to add. I think you cut in for
me. Yes, sir. I'm going to say to you, We have the same problem with the hot rods. The young men, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, do donuts in the middle of the street. And we have the four wheelers. We have the dirt bikes. You hear them all times of night. I mean, it's just a lot of them, man. It might be 50 to 60 of them down the street. Females are with them, with the brothers with the females. And what they need to do, all of these empty warehouses, they need to take and fix them up and let them have competition.
Right.
Let them have competition with the four-wheelers and then the dirt bikes and the skateboards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's one solution. And the ones that want to do the hot rod, they can have races with the hot rod. Some of the stuff you have to be creative on, man.
Yeah.
You have to think about how to do this, maneuver it, because we were all young. I mean, none of us were perfect at being young.
No, we're not.
We had to grow like everybody else. We made it this far, though, because there's a lot of things out there to get caught up with, and you could be an innocent bystander and be at the wrong place at the right time. Most of us was able to dodge, and we would get out of it or never get in it at all. But we're not perfect, and we're learning every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just solution suggestion. And we need all these construction sites and all these job openings that some of these teenagers don't want to take. You got to have some type of program to employ them, to house them, to educate them. The whole ball of wax is hard. I say it like it's easy. You and all of us know it's not easy. We try to come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just want to add that. That's all.
Let me ask you something, just on a hypothetical.
Yes,
so we get together, a bunch of us, tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Let's say we get 8, 9, 10 of people. How do we start from your perspective? How do you begin? Okay, we get together and do what?
Well, I think we first thing we get together and do something that you always talk about, Dr. Rogers, is talk about education, hygiene. You always talk about the hygiene piece. How to be gainfully employed and read. We start with reading and writing and arithmetic.
Right.
Education and employment.
Right.
Employment. Let me tell you something. And guess what?
Geographically,
you and I would go to the Nile Valley civilization. I think start off with feeding them baby food before we get to the meat and potatoes.
Okay.
We'll do the history piece. You got to give it to them gradually.
So like an educational thing, like a classroom setting, like a Saturday
exactly.
school. That's what you're saying. Okay.
And guess what? Also self-defense, because they think they need a gun all the time.
Right.
So self-defense.
Exactly.
I think one of the things we need to consider is helping these young kids feel a sense of who they are.
Yes.
And you got to help them be okay being me, being different.
Mm-hmm. It's
okay.
Right.
And so that's the first, but we've got to do that among ourselves as adults. You understand? We are their example. And so we got to live it.
Right.
Not just say it, we got to live it.
Got to live it. That's exactly right. There we go. They got to see it in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You tell them to do it and you don't do it. You know, it is nothing. They got to see that in you. That's a cardinal rule of our interior and teacher. They have to see that behavior in yourself as well and do that.
I think that if we as adults got together, the first thing we need to do is brainstorm so that we come to a common ground. Now, this is our front.
Right.
And then we all approach it from that perspective, not leaving anything out because it's so broad and it's so much. And like you say, a lot of the old ways, which were our strength, are gone. But that was a deliberate tactic, too. And because of our vulnerability, and like the brother said earlier, no transition from slavery training, we fall for anything. Anything that's against us. Everything we look at, it's not for us. It's against us.
Mm-hmm.
And we work to our own demise.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Very good. Very, very good. Brother Kwasi, you do that martial art training with young people, correct?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
And how is that? How do you see the results from that? Are those young people doing anything? Have they taken some of that training that you've given them? And what are they doing with it?
Well, most of those people that I've been working with, they've developed self-confidence in themselves, so they understand that the value that they bring and so many other things. Martial arts is basically a way of life, how you live your life. And, you know, you understand your capabilities, possibilities in so many areas, and it's not just self-defense, it's about living among other people.
Right.
And that's what we do. And so a lot of people, when they think about it as just fighting. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to kind of add on to something that Brother Timothy was talking. He was talking about, you know, they need a place where they can do stuff. Detroit was one of the most dangerous places to live for black people in the 90s. They had the highest kill rate. The city of Detroit, and I'm talking about community leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say community leaders, these are just young people that were running the streets, that were partying, doing drugs and stuff like that. And they came among themselves, and they're actually on Facebook. I forgot the group. But you can catch them on YouTube. But one of the things they said was, look, man, we don't need to kill each other. We don't need to get these police involved. We like dragon racing. We like to do this. What we going to do, we're going to do it at this location at such and such a time. We'll block this off. We'll do this. We'll do that. And then we'll go party afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
No guns, no this, no that. And so you have a group, you got a couple hundred people, and we're talking 300 people or something like that, you know, at these big parties that they put on and stuff like that. No incidents, no fights. And a matter of fact, there are fights, but they're stage fights where people put on some boxing gloves, and if they want to fight, they can fight that way. And one of the things that the police started doing was they started interrupting that, stopping them from doing a lot of these things. But one of the reasons they started to do that, they wanted to curb the violence and so forth, which they did. And so we've always been doing things like that in the community.
Right.
But like I said, when they get involved, they like to change things, because one of the things that they've done within the last 15 years, they've changed the law, and regardless how you can discipline your kids.
Okay. Yeah,
you know,
true.
And
that's
so
true.
A lot of people don't understand that, so they don't understand what their rights are as parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids think that they have more rights than the parents, so they get away with a lot more because of the lack of understanding. And so there's just so many host of things that can be done, but you know, I think that teaching people, you know, when you're talking about the social centers, all those different things that I grew up in that gave me a sense of value, and you had people that was in the community that you knew, and you had these get-together, block watch parties, all these kind of different things were part of those social centers that they took out. Well, those are things that would be back in play if you do a lot of this police reform. But like I said, that police reform is about power. I mean, not power. I mean, by keeping the police and not having police reform, because they get to go out there and they get to call who they discipline, how they discipline. And again, it usually doesn't favor us. And so there's a lot of things that we can work on. And knowing our history is big, because when you look at our counterparts, these white people, they know a lie about their history. And as far as they feel, they're great because they've been fed lies. And we've been fed lies as well, feeling that we're unworthy, and we were second class citizens, and we're below. So not having that self esteem, not feeling self worth, and so forth. So we go out in the community. I tell you, when I'm not feeling good about myself, I mean, I'm not good to myself or anybody else. But you know, I have a different attitude about myself because I know who I am.
Right.
And I started learning more and more as I started learning more about Africa.
Right.
And the Africa in me and so forth. And so what the sister was talking about, you know, the educator and was it Brother Marcus? I mean, on point.
Okay.
Know?
Okay. All right.
I think that one of the other things we need to... So we need to understand first, you can't give the young adult teenager the same support that you're giving a child at 9 A child of nine is learning from the older people. So we got to stop that non-positive presentation. We got to understand that we are part of a prison industry complex. They want us to be in trouble because industry, prison is an industry.
Right.
Yeah. And they got to keep that industry going.
Yeah, exactly.
Good point. Good point.
So we've got to stop and intervene in there. There are enough resources in Milwaukee. There are chess clubs. There are a lot of things in here that we as a people need to come together, look at our resources, and figure out how to design them so that we can intervene with our children at every age, from three and up.
Very good point.
Or younger
than Very good point.
We gotta encourage them. We gotta nurture them. Because when you get 24 and you're acting like a nut, and I'm saying that non-positively, running up and down the street, that's because you didn't have the intervention at nine.
Right, right. Exactly. Very good. Sister Yan, how you doing today? Are you listening or you want to make a comment?
You know I'm going to run my mouth.
Okay. All right.
Awful.
Greetings, family. How's everybody?
Great. How you doing?
Everything's good.
I love everything that I've heard so far because it's just so on point. I want to stress one word.
Okay.
Organize.
Right.
If we don't organize all of the wonderful things that we've done and the things we're talking about doing from the, you know, the I remember I'm from Brooklyn to those block parties, you know, we had a ball to Saturday schools and all the things that we've done, it all took organization. And that's something that Black Lives Matter understood, NAACP. A lot of organizations that are not really working for us, you know, for true liberation from this psychopathic system to the psychopathic system itself. They understand organization.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, well, so we've always organized and gotten things done from the church to Black Nationalist Community. Malcolm, you know, had his organization that Professor Smalls talks about all the time that he took over when Malcolm was murdered. Mm-hmm. You know, we always organized. The issue is that two things. One is that everything we organized was disrupted and interrupted.
Yes, yes.
So one of the critical questions issues we've got to deal with is what do we do to stop that, to not allow that to happen, that level of interruption. You know, they interrupted Black Wall Street. They interrupted the 60s movements. You know, all the black towns we have, building highways through the towns. We've done amazing things, and everything was interrupted. So let's deal with, you know, you talked about three steps. Doc, I always say, you know, use a scientific method. You know, the cause, the effect, and the solution. What caused us to get in this condition that we are in 2021 where we're worse off than we were in the 1960s?
That's true.
We had community. Everybody on this call I'm hearing remembers when we did all these great things. And now, what is it? 40 years, whatever amount of years, my brain is kind of on low tonight. But all these years later, these decades later, we're not doing better.
No, we're not. That's what I'm talking about.
We've got to look at why. And brother, I think it was Brother Herbie White was talking, hit it on the head. We've been under psychological attack as well as the prison industry and the food industry and the vaccine industry. And everything you could think of has been used as an attack against us.
Right.
So the reality is that we can put all these things into effect tomorrow. But if we don't, if one of us can, you know, each of us can on our own. But if we don't organize and work together in some kind of way, using media, using all the resources that we have, then it's just going to be interrupted by them or us.
Did you know something?
But one more quick thing, sis. The psychological piece. Everybody doesn't understand that. People say, oh, well, all we got to do is this and all we got to do is that. You can't do that if you're not in your right mind.
Right.
The stuff that we're talking about doing, if you're not in your right mind, you can't do it.
Yeah.
So we need those organized, doctor, you were talking about, I think you were talking about, and you have, but you have talked about think tanks.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to come together. We can't do this, these things as individuals or little organizations or groups, rather, here and there. We've got to have another Garvey movement. You know, something that big that will wake our people up to go back, not to the old ways, it's the ways that every human being does, and that's take care of their damn children.
Right. That's exactly.
And not let another group of crazies tell you how you can raise your children. Quick,
exactly.
The brother that just said exactly, I think you talked about how, you know, they're telling our children they could call the police on us and whatnot. We can't accept that. We've got to say hell no. And this is how you say hell no. You say you want to call the police, all right? Before you do that, pack all your bags, everything you got, because after you make that call, you going with the police.
Right, exactly.
Right. That's right.
Let's see if they call the police. We have got to not let our children,
right? That's right.
Feed into this. I'm gonna cuss y'all. This bullshit that we're being fed. We have to interrupt that. So there's a lot we can do, but please, brothers and sisters, let's organize because it's getting rough out here.
Yeah, it's getting rough.
I think one of the I agree and I'm gonna piggyback on this. We've got lawyers, we've got individuals in every occupational realm that there is.
That's right.
Our lawyers, our community lawyers should be doing something to see what legislation they're using to interrupt and destroy our communities at every turn in every city. It becomes eminent domain and they put the people on the one side and the business on the other and you can't do anything but fail. Our lawyers need to be working on that. Our Greeks, they've got information authority that we need to be working on specific issues. We don't all have to come together in one body, but we need to work on issues that we got to deal with. And they are constant. They've been going on forever. That's how how Wall Street got destroyed. We got to get rid of them, so we're going to destroy their industries. We've got to do something to govern them ourselves. That's all. It's terrible.
Hey, Doc Rogers, if I could just add on a couple of things.
Go right ahead.
We had Safe Nights back in the early 80s, and the Safe Nights were programs that were developed in the inner city community, and you had programs where they wanted to curb the violence and help educate the kids, and they had activities for the kids, and they were basically supervised by adults, school teachers, and then they had areas where kids could go to for specific learning, whether it was math, reading, sciences, all those activities. And this was a weekend activity on Saturday, so kids had that to look, and that went on till about 7-8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked.
Yeah,
and they saw that was working.
You remember that midnight basketball they used to have?
Oh, yes. I was part of all of that, Project Respect, and they did that in the schools, and they did that all. But one of the things that they did, they would always find a way, like Sister was just saying earlier, about interrupting. They would find a way that funds weren't available, then they had to stop the program.
But then
if you go somewhere else, and when I say you have to stop the program, you got to look at who is benefiting. It's benefiting people that look like us. And so they're always going to do something to say that they tried, but this didn't work. But when you go out in the suburbs and they have these programs, all you hear about is that they graduate to the next stage. They elevate them to this and so forth. It continues to keep going, but ours always stops. And that's purposeful.
Right.
And so we have to understand that
and do our own thing. Because, you know, when somebody was just talking about, you know, getting our elected officials and some of these lawyers, and, you know, that's just a tough call, because when you look at what's going on, you know, they have their own bosses, and they don't seem to cater or favor anything that needs to be done for, you know, the disenfranchised communities and stuff. That's a tough one.
Yeah, and we you're right. And then a lot of times you're saying there's a lot of that's the self-inflicted. You know, these stoppages are self-inflicted. I mean, you recall here in Wisconsin when you had a very strong SDC program in place. You had OIC had all kinds of programs, just everything for these kids. And people got greedy, and you know, some things happened, and you know, they shut them down. You know, I mean, we had one of the best summer festivals, I think, anywhere in the country, African World Festival. People used to come from Chicago, Indiana, and everywhere here to Milwaukee for the African World Festival, which was sponsored by OIC. And then when they lost their funding, and then, you know, it all went poof right down the drain. So, yeah, there's some things that we really have to deal with in terms of the organizing, as you said, and coming together. There's some thinking that we have to do. We got to really look at how we are building and moving forward and putting those in place. We got to get some of the old institutions back in there. You cannot let the black church rest. You got to bring them, get them out, wake them up, tell them to come on. You know, let's go. And a lot of them are willing. You know, a lot of the pastors,
Dr. Rogers,
and leaders, they're willing. Yes, sir.
And for all my Brooklynites, I know you all remember back in the early '80s.
Okay.
The projects out in Coney Island.
Oh yeah.
Around Mermaid Avenue, Neptune Avenue, 23rd Street. Mm-hmm. All them drugs and carrying on that was going on out there.
Uh-huh.
And they got the Nation of Islam security force.
They sure did.
And when they came out there, they got rid of all those drug dealers and everything.
That's right.
The people were so happy they could come out and sit on the benches. They said they could never do that before.
Mm-hmm.
And then this white politician from upstate New York, Peter King, he said that the Nation of Islam was trying to make them buy papers and join, and got rid of them, and the drugs came right back.
Yep, that's right.
But let me say something regarding that.
Okay.
To the point that we're talking about the issue, why did we allow that to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Speak to me, the Nation of Islam has been mm-hmm. one of the most, the most powerful organizations for pro-blackness in the U.S. Why did we allow what Brother Herbie just said?
Right.
Yeah. Why do we allow that?
And that's the question.
These are the things we need to talk about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. those are the issues we need to deal with. D.C. Yes. D.C. was another place that the Nation of Islam made powerful moves, and they gave them an honor, and then they realized who they were and tried to take it back.
That's right.
They had communities with, yes, right.
Washington, D.C. They did in D.C.
Yes, that's what I'm talking. That's right.
Uh-huh. We did it here in Philadelphia. We did it here in Philadelphia, Average Folk Projects. We did the same thing. We called the Dope Busters. But after it was over, the community tried to make it seem like we were demonizing after a while. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
That's psychology. That's that psychology.
That's what
but
I'm
another
saying.
Thing is America's need to mobilize everything. You know, there was Muslim exposure, black power. Everything was a fear. That was part of it. And we fell for it. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's it.
I'd like to bring in something else real quick before we end. I'd like to share this. I don't know if anybody saw this. But there was a program that I watched last night, a very reliable news source. And it was about Bill Gates.
About what?
And
Bill Gates.
Okay.
Bill Gates, yeah,
okay. Oh,
the
okay.
billionaire.
Mm.
One of the weapons that they're using on us that's very effective right now And since we're talking about, you know, what we can do about, you know, our situation, and I've said this, you know, a few times before, is marketing and promoting millionaireism. You ain't yes. nobody if you don't have $1 million.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's another new, it's a brand new trap.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't brand mm-hmm. new, but it's a new trap
mm-hmm.
That they're putting a whole lot of media time in. So I hear brothers talk about Bill Gates all of the time. And, you know, I just said, okay, another wealthy, you know, so-called elite, you know, I know they ain't no good. But the expose was done on this cat last mm-hmm. night. This dude, for those who don't know, was responsible for vaccinating a lot That's of right. people in Africa and That's killing right. them with the mm-hmm. vaccine.
Sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. It was OTB or something like that. So it, in one sense, it was they were vaccinating children, and some of the children yep. were being helped by it, but the majority of the children died from it.
Mm-hmm.
And why would
that's because it was experimental.
Why would we listen to it? He mm-hmm. is not even a medical. Why would you listen
Thank
to
you.
Him?
Thank you. He's and what he does... What he does is put his billions into the pharmaceutical yes. companies, yes. prison companies, right. every politician, he has a piece of everything. He's bought a piece yes. of every system. Yes. And so yes. now he's using his money to control almost everything. And I'm watching this in shock, what a billionaire can do.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he can dictate policy.
Yeah, these are and so these are billion, out, these are billionaires. Yeah,
yes. And him and Dr. Fauci are in bed together.
Well, you know they're going but into outer know, space. They trying to go to outer space. They won't mm-hmm. buy that.
They need to go to atmosphere. It's killing them here. But you know something? The other thing that's interesting here is that if you really want to become a millionaire, become a politician.
Yeah.
How is that that all the politicians growing up poor get to Washington and become millionaires?
Yeah,
most true. Of them. Look at them.
That's what most yeah, of them right are doing.
But we ain't gonna make it. They ain't gonna let us in there because they don't want you to know what they're doing. They don't want you in there at the drawing board when they're at the drawing board. So the only That's thing it. You can continue, the only thing they use the black ones for is to continue to be house Negroes.
Right.
Speech.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you understand right. because they're being bought by the lobbyists. That's all it is. The big companies, they lobby and they give people stuff. You do this. Okay, I'll buy this.
Yeah, and they're batting them real good.
Gates,
yeah, they are. All across
Bill
the board.
Gates is buying up a lot of agriculture. He's buying up a lot of farmland and everything.
Yes.
He's supposed to be doing Microsoft. What is he doing putting out all kind of vaccines, mandates, and all this, all the way from
Thank
Africa,
you.
India?
And we listening to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say this real quick?
Let me
the reason I brought Bill Gates up for what you sisters just said, what he's doing, and I'll wrap it up with this, he is taking basically charge of what we eat,
yes.
what we put in
yes.
our bodies, the drugs that we use. This dude is dictating
mm-hmm. yep.
What goes inside most, well, a lot of Americans, but specifically, you know, he's targeting black people because his
mm-hmm.
business.
Mm-hmm.
His goal is depopulation. There's yes. too many
right.
blacks
that's right.
on this
that's
earth
right.
for him.
That's right. That's
and
right.
So,
that's right.
But we've got to educate our young people because they're following this millionaire crap and have this guy on a pedestal as some kind of icon when he's
right.
a mass murderer.
Mm-hmm.
That's
you
know
right.
something?
Exactly.
But we got to teach our young people the truth. I want to end with
that's
that.
Right.
Let me ask Sister Ann. Sister Ann, do you have a question or comment? I know you've been sitting there very quietly, or are you just listening?
No, basically I'm just listening. The only comment I have to make is we were talking about children. The only comment I have to make is that, and I think we all need to remember this: that children learn what they live.
Eat truth.
All right.
Children
that's
learn
right.
is starting out as babies.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most black people don't realize. They're just like sponges.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
see or hear us do, they absorb it. And as infants, it starts out then.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
As they grow, they absorb it. And whatever they start acting like when they're teenagers or when they're 6, 7, 8 years old, it's basically because what they have lived. Yes, so they let you know, you got to check what's going on in your household. You have to be careful what you say to them. You have to be careful how you say it to them. It's not an ever ending process. It's a process that goes on daily when you got children. But a lot of people don't know that. And another thing I have to say is this. I think another problem that has happened to our youth is because we are the problem, because they have no spiritual guidance.
That's right.
They don't fear anything.
They don't have it. Right. That's right.
Us. Because a lot of us, after we got grown, I've heard a lot of people say they're atheists. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in this. But this happened to them after they got grown. But most black people brought up in the church.
And
we strayed away from it, so be it. Mm. But we did have morals. And see, today, people don't have morals.
No, none at all.
They
on Facebook and Instagram with that mess. I was hoping they were going to close that stuff down too.
Can I just add on to some redeeming qualities? You had made a comment about African World Fest, about how everybody came from all over the country in different places just to be part of that, and it was going so good in Milwaukee. There was a couple weeks ago on WNOV, Michelle Brain had made a statement about the young man, because remember you said it got shut down. Well, that was the young man that got it shut down. And he got it shut down because he got mad at something. He was young. He was 17 at the time. And he started shooting. And they ended up shutting it down. And years later, when they did start it back, they had to spend over $10,000 for metal detectors and security and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that put a damper on things.
Right.
Well, that young man, several years later, he appeared at African World Festival. He had a young kid with him. He got on stage, admitted his wrong, said that he was the reason that African World Festival got shut down, and that he's sorry. He has a kid now. He has a different way of thinking. He wants to be part of the community, and he wants his son to grow up and so forth and this and that. And it was a very powerful statement, heartfelt statement, and a lot of people just broke down on that statement from that young man, the sincerity and so forth. So there's a lot of redeeming qualities in a lot of our people when given a chance and so forth. And so I just wanted to
I remember that shooting, But I think the OIC issue was the debt that had accumulated.
Right, yes.
Yeah, and that's they weren't able to pay that, and there were several efforts to try to correct that debt so that they could, you know, because they have to pay for the use of that park, and it's very expensive. So yeah, and I think that's one of the big areas too that was a part of that. But I do remember that shooting, part of that. Yeah, but go right ahead.
I want to make one statement. I want piggybacking on the lady that was just ahead. The talk. There's a book called The Bible Legacy of the Black Race, and in essence, it said that something we have done pulled us away from the infinite spirit, however we define the infinite spirit. And until we get ourselves back on that track, we will encounter difficulty.
Right.
The Bible Legacy of the Black Race.
You know, a lot of the wisdom from our elders always used the book of Deuteronomy to talk about that, because Deuteronomy says that same kind of thing, that we are going to pay, our children are going to do the things that they do to us, and we're going to lose our communities and so forth. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but that's a old wisdom teaching. You're right about that, and it has been prophesied, you know, in several writings or so forth about you know, about the kind of thing that what we've done, and we've got to come back and find ourselves and find our community and our families, you know, in a way
that's
that
right.
We can go back and rebuild, because we can rebuild. We can do this. I know we
yes.
can. And we can't give up on it. And we've got to get
can
out.
I throw this in real quick?
Uh-huh.
Before we were taken from Africa,
uh-huh.
We were not Christians, nor
yes,
the majority
you.
Of us.
That's right.
Say, we're not
that's
Christians,
right.
nor Muslims,
right.
nor Buddhists. I mean, we yes. were Africans who understood the value of humanity.
Yes.
And the value
nature.
Of Ubuntu.
Very good.
That
very
we
well
right.
put. Very well put. Very well put.
Yeah. That we belong. Somebody's beeping and I got to let this pass. Stood that we belong to each other, and our ancestors in Africa didn't focus on all these external things that we're talking about, millionaireism and all
right.
these, having these different, you know, block parties or whatever. That's something mm-hmm. that was a natural part of our culture, and we brought some of that here, but we don't necessarily need certain things that have worked for us here. You know, they work for us here because that's all we had.
Right.
But a lot of this, this is us naturally. We are communal people. Our families have always come first.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, who we are, what we are, was interrupted totally when we were taken. It does go back to slavery. And a healthy black family is what African culture is all about.
Mm-hmm.
We were just interrupted. And we've got to undo what was done to us. And it starts, like the brother said, with psychology. Understand the psychology of what was done to us.
And understand our spirituality. It has nothing to do with Christianity. Spirituality
yes.
is the essence of who we are.
Right,
yes.
sister. And I'm glad you
I'm
said
sure.
that. That was my whole point. We're a spiritual people.
Yes, we are.
We
right.
have kinds
exactly.
of all kinds of spiritual it's, systems. We're spiritual people. But we still... keep getting
ourselves.
Oppressed. So there has to be something in addition to our spirituality.
Right.
And that's a whole nother conversation.
Right.
But something in addition to our, we are deeply, we're out, what Brother Dr. Clark maybe said, that we out Muslim than Muslims and out Christian to Christians, but we still get oppressed
right.
and beaten
yeah.
down.
Exactly.
So we've
yeah.
got to look at the whole picture.
Right. Well, listen, this has been a very
the,
rich
the funny
conversation.
Thing, we get beaten down minding our own business.
Yeah.
It's not like we're different people interfering with other people. We are minding our own business in our own
that's
place.
It.
Right.
And they
that's
still
right.
come
that's
in
it.
The middle.
That's it. That's
I,
it.
I got to close it out, folks. We are right at the Bewitching Hour. And I really appreciate all of your input. This has been a very rich conversation. We have to continue this before in the future, because this is not going to go away with one talk, as you
right.
know. So we want to mm-hmm. come back and revisit this again. But I do thank all of you for your input to this. We'll be back next Tuesday with another discussion in this area. But again, thank you so much. Be safe and take care.
Thank
you.
Peace
for
Black Power.
Peace for Black Power.
Go step family.
A girl that step, only wish that they could be. If the seven wonders of the world, and I know she's got to be number one.
Mm-hmm.